Hello, I'm Brett Rounceville. This is number 0392 of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
There, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0392. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, Dave Pell is back from the newsletter Next Draft. He's on the fight against fake news.
The term has been hijacked by Trump, and it really has almost no meaning. That's why I say it's really about there's dark tactics on the web that are used in order to trick people. There's lies, either from the administration or from certain media outlets that are supportive of certain causes. And then there's bias, which can often show itself as a decision to either not publish a story or to publish it in the back pages. So there's all these different factors, and I think lumping it into fake news as one big category probably isn't that useful at this point.
Tech guru Tom Merritt, host of the Daily Tech News Show. It's a show that gives info to both those who are tech savvy and newbies.
What we try to do is give people the information they need to know to understand all of this technology around them. And sometimes there'll be some phrases and terms that you might not know right away, but we do our best to try to explain things in a way that everybody can understand and at least get, because we want to appeal both to folks who are in the IT industry and sysadmins and working hard at this every day, but also to folks who are like, you know what, I've got a smartphone and I want to figure out if it's the right one and how to make the best use of it.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. Among other things, he talks about the arrest of the rabble-rousing rabbis.
And they were demonstrating about this, that, and the other thing, and they all got arrested. And then I thought to myself, what could be funnier than a bunch of Jewish Orthodox rabbis getting arrested and put into the police van to be taken to the police station? And I thought to myself, my goodness, we're working on a Woody Allen movie here.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day, the guest Slater. The person who told you this was show number 0392 was Brett Rounceville, founder of Mission Pick. You may have heard him on the show just a couple of weeks back. He was actually a guest on the program. Well, you can visit his website at missionpick.com. That's missionpic.com. Thank you very much, Brett, for doing the guest Slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. The show is also on patreon.com. The Stuff File program is a listener-supported radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Be a patron of the show and find out about our rewards program. I also would love to hear your thoughts about the Stuff File program and even some of your ideas for rewards. So come on, participate and join us for the ride. Visit patreon.com/thestufffileprogram and be part of the Stuff File Nation. Okay, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? 22-year-old Jacob Martin Giles ordered Chicken McNuggets at a McDonald's in Greymouth, New Zealand. Now, it's unclear what happened to his order, but he didn't get his nuggets. So he jumped onto the counter with two guns and started yelling and shooting. This being New Zealand, the guns were fluorescent orange and yellow toy Nerf guns shooting foam wiggly things, not bullets, said his lawyer Doug Tafts. They are toys which are for children aged 4 to 6. Greymouth District Court Judge Robert Murfitt was not impressed. 4 years old was the level of maturity you displayed, he told Giles. He convicted Giles of disorderly behavior and fined him $100. At 22 years old, it's a little late to start as a juvenile delinquent, I think. You know, the sad reality is that a story like this dealing with McNuggets in the United States would involve a real gun. No, I'm not passing judgment on the U.S. I'm just stating fact. Case in point, an unnamed girl told school officials in Harlem, New York, that a classmate had followed her off the train, saw her go into McDonald's to buy chicken McNuggets, and then pulled a gun on her, demanding she give him one. According to a local news report, the girl smacked the gun from her head and told the boy to leave her alone. The boy, just 12 years old, has been arrested. I'm guessing the girl knew that if he couldn't afford a McNugget, he couldn't afford ammo. Okay, you've had it with McNuggets? Fine, let's move on to tacos. According to investigators, a man and his girlfriend were making a late-night taco truck stop in Houston, Texas. The woman said her taco was cold, but the truck worker refused to reheat it. Her boyfriend told her to calm down, and that's when she allegedly pulled out a gun. The boyfriend was shot, but is expected to survive. It's not clear if she intentionally shot him or if the gun went off accidentally, and there isn't any surveillance video to help piece the facts together. So, the taco was cold, but clearly, she was colder. We're on a roll with food, so let's keep going, shall we? Two men robbed a pizza delivery man in Penn Township, Pennsylvania. 18-year-old Logan Matthew Alexander, a star basketball player and a senior at DeLone Catholic High School, and his 17-year-old accomplice escaped with $25 cash and two pizzas. The juvenile was identified by the victim as the gunman, and due to the severe nature of the charges, he was charged as an adult and identified by police. Wait until you hear his name. His name is Sheldon Isaiah Cheese. Yes, that's right. A guy named Cheese robbed a pizza delivery man. You can't make this stuff up. Okay, now this next story is one that I just really don't understand. According to police, 23-year-old Antisha Andrea Brown chased two pregnant women in a car, threatened them with a stun gun and a crowbar, and ultimately drove into their vehicle and wrecked it. But for some reason, Riviera Beach, Florida police decided they wouldn't arrest her. Then one of the victims came back with a new complaint. Not only had Brown destroyed their car and threatened them, she had the audacity to boast about it online. The police changed their minds, and Brown was off to jail facing aggravated battery charges. So, what I want to know is, did the boasting boost the evidence, or just aggravate the police? I mean, why didn't they arrest her in the first place? She threatened people and destroyed their car. That's just baffling. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, when Ross Compton's Middleton, Ohio house caught on fire, he called 911 and noted, "I grabbed a bunch of stuff, threw it out the window after smashing it, suitcases full of belongings, in fact." He also told the dispatcher he has an artificial heart. After investigators decided the fire was suspicious since it had multiple points of origin, they talked to his cardiologist, who said it was highly improbable that Compton could do something so strenuous. Detectives apparently got a unique search warrant to get Compton's heart rate, pacer demand, and cardiac rhythms from his heart monitor, comparing what they were before, during, and after the fire. It was one of the key pieces of evidence that allowed us to charge him with arson and insurance fraud, said Middleton Police Lieutenant Jimmy Cunningham. Well, that and the gasoline found on Compton's clothing. Compton says that he had no motive whatsoever to burn down my house. Yes, but this is the rare occasion where, for once, the police know what's really in his heart. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? We've had Dave Pell on the program before, and I've mentioned how vital his daily newsletter, Next Draft, is as a great read. Well, in this current political climate, there is also the issue of fake news, which is something that Dave has railed against for the last little while, and fighting that phenomenon is yet another reason why his newsletter is even more vital. Dave is on the line with us right now via Skype from San Francisco. Hi, Dave.
Hi, good to talk to you.
Nice to have you on the program again. Recently reading one of your Next Draft reports, you were going on about fake news. I believe you even had T-shirts touting the idea of not falling for fake news.
We made some Read Real News T-shirts, and they sold pretty well. People seem pretty into it. So it's definitely a movement. Like everything involved with Trump, there's two sides to the story. He's attacking real news, but he's also sort of promoting it at the same time. A lot of real news outlets are doing better than ever these days.
For those in the audience who still aren't familiar with the Next Draft, it's one of those newsletters out there that is, I guess you can call it, content curation news website or newsletter, correct?
Yeah, I like to think of it as sort of a modern-day column. I give an overview of the day's most fascinating news. I describe it in my own words and with my own takes, and then I link off to the full story for more information.
Now, is it becoming harder than when you first started with the proliferation of fake news?
Well, it's for me, it's not really that hard to pick out the fake news from the real news. That actually seems pretty clear to me, and in a lot of cases, I think it's clear to most people, but that fake news still has a pretty big impact. That part of the Trump era hasn't made it harder for me. The part of the endless stream of what would be the story of the month turning into the story of the hour at the most, and just the cycle moving so quickly, that makes it a lot harder. I definitely picked the wrong week to stop sniffing news.
Well, do you think that this is the genie out of the bottle that's going to be hard to get back in? Or I know, you've had the T-shirts, you talk about it, you rail against it. Many people, many established journalists rail about it. But is this a train that has left the station?
Well, I think it's the original story of fake news that was coming out during the election is almost passé at this point. Because it's been sort of the term fake news has been pretty much hijacked by the Trump team to describe anything that is news that is negative for them in any way. So in some ways, I definitely think the bubbles that we live in are really damaging in a lot of ways to our democracy. I think in some ways, issues other than what we think of as fake news are sort of bigger issues, like what news gets covered in a lot of cases is bigger than the way it gets covered. For example, in the day after the inauguration during the Women's March, 1 in 5 American newspapers did not cover that march at all. The Fox News website homepage had one little link at the very bottom mentioning the Women's March, whereas it was, several million people in many locations and was being covered as top news. If you live in one bubble, it was being completely ignored if you live in another bubble. Now, when I describe these bubbles that people live in, which is sort of common these days, I don't want to give a false equivalency and say that these are two equal news bubbles or views of the world. There is a separation between real news, some of which may be sort of biased and some of it may be not biased, and completely ridiculous lies. And I think it's important that we stop using terms like fake news and start using terms like lies, because it really has to be separated. It's not a matter of two sides with opposing opinions about what happened. It's a matter of facts versus lies.
Okay, so when you have a president who is touting constantly the term fake news and members of his administration who are touting fake news, and when they say that, they're basically talking about mainstream media. Does that hurt overall the Fourth Estate?
There's no doubt that, Steve Bannon has called the media, mainstream media, the opposition party. There's no doubt that's the way that the Trump administration is viewing them. I don't know if everybody in the Trump administration agrees, because we're seeing an unprecedented number of leaks from the administration and from intel agencies that have led to a bunch of scandals and stories in the last few weeks. But on the other hand, we're also seeing huge subscriber numbers for the New York Times and other news outlets that he attacks. So I don't know if it's changing a lot of minds on either side, honestly. We're so divided. People who are accusing Trump of being a liar, in my opinion, rightly so, just can't believe that other people would vote for this guy. And yet, all these scandals and news stories that have come out in the first month of the administration aren't really moving that many people off of their approval ratings. He's at a 40% approval rating, which is a really low number for a new president, but that's still 40% who think it's going pretty well, whereas people who are reading the mainstream news and observing it from what I would think is a pretty objective standpoint see it as going into a completely disastrous area. So it's there's such a separation. I'm not sure if at this point anything Trump says about the news is really having that big of an impact on the people who are predisposed to believe news, to adhere to scientific fact, to believe what they see with their own eyes and hear with their own ears. I'm not sure if those people are really being shaken much by a guy they already don't trust. I think there's bigger issues. I think even during the election, there were bigger issues than fake news, really, and more effective tactics. I mean, you know, a lot of the focus during the campaign was on this company called Cambridge Analytica. I'm pretty sure they're now working for the White House, but they helped manage both the Leave campaign and the Brexit campaign in England, and they also were the tech team that managed a lot of the marketing for the Trump campaign during the election. And in that case, it's really about, it's not just fake news, it's about identifying people on social media who are either undecided or might be leaning towards Hillary but might be able to change their mind, and getting in front of those people sort of news that's not accurate, fake, or even tricking them into thinking that they voted online, putting up a screen that says, hey, click here to vote for Hillary and save your trip to the poll. Now, stuff like that is not going to work with a majority of people, but let's say you put it in front of 2 million people in that voting class and, you know, 10 to 20 to 30,000 people buy it. Well, that's all it takes when you have an election that's as close as our last one was. So fake news is sort of this broad category. It's been hijacked. The term has been hijacked by Trump, and it really has almost no meaning. That's why I say it's really about there's dark tactics on the web that are used in order to trick people. There's lies either from the administration or from certain media outlets that are supportive of certain causes. And then there's bias, which can often show itself as a decision to either not publish a story or to publish it in the back pages. So there's all these different factors. And I think lumping it into fake news as one big category probably isn't that useful at this point.
Now, as for your newsletter, Next Draft, one of the things I like about it, and I do read it every day, is there's a variety of stuff in there for anybody who wants to read the various things you come up with on each and every day. But I've noticed in the last little while you start off with a lot of the political stuff. How has Next Draft for you changed over the last little while since the election? And do you ever worry about the so-called, for lack of a better term, Trump fatigue that some people might have? It's like, oh gosh, I don't want to read any more about this guy.
Yeah, I worry about that every day. I have been a political blogger at different points in my life. I did not set out to turn Next Draft into anything political. If Trump fatigue is a ailment, I probably was patient zero, because I'm going to 75 to 80 news sites a day and have been tortured by this story during the election and post-election. And I definitely think there is, on one hand, there is a lot of Trump fatigue. The issue I have with Next Draft, as somebody who's trying to cover all the news, is that he is a news vacuum. All topics have been sucked up by the Trump messaging machine. And he, love him or hate him, he is the most compelling figure in recent American history. Certainly, I would say maybe in political history in the last 100 years. But he's... I like him, but the number of stories that he generates are just unbelievable. And, you know, the result of that is also that there's just not that many interesting stories on other topics. Not that there are none, but there's a lot fewer than there were before all of this started. So I feel for people who have Trump fatigue. I do get emails from people who read my newsletter that say, can't we cover a different topic? And every day I wake up in the morning and open up my 75 tabs hoping that there'll be some other lead story that day or some other interesting stories down the line. Generally, I can find 5 or 6 non-Trump stories every day to keep things interesting, but it's more and more challenging every day. And the pace of the Trump stories actually has increased in the week since he's been elected as opposed to decreasing. So I don't see that trend slowing down anytime soon. And it's, you know, it's not just a newsletter problem or even a news consumption problem. Every dinner party I go to, the conversation inevitably turns to Trump. Every time you overhear a conversation, people are talking about Trump. If you have a business meeting, after you're done talking business, the conversation goes back to Trump. So he really is dominating discussions. And in that way, you know, he's getting the last laugh. I mean, this is a guy who wanted to be the center of attention. He came of age during the Ed Koch era in New York City. And Koch was a guy who really believed that anytime you're the guy in the headlines is a winning day, whether it's good news or bad news. And by that standard, Trump really is winning constantly, even if his administration is suffering losses. He personally is, through his lens, I think, is probably winning because he's absolutely dominant. You look at front pages of newspapers on both sides of the political spectrum, and every story on the front page is basically something about Trump. So it's pretty amazing. So yes, I do suffer from it. Yes, I do worry about it as a newsletter writer. Yes, it is increasing the stress of Americans on both sides of the aisle. And no, I don't think it's going to change in the short term.
Well, it might be stressful for you to go through this each and every day to filter out what goes into the next draft, but it's much worth it for everyone who reads Next Draft. I thank you very much, Dave, for being on the program with us once again.
All right. Thanks for the kind words, and it was good talking to you.
Journalist Dave Pell, the man behind the online newsletter Next Draft, which I urge you to subscribe to. It comes out on weekdays. You can visit my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is number 0392, and you'll find links to Dave's site.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. You know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Pay very close attention. There could be a test leader.
And still to come on the program, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, will share a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. We'll also talk to Tom Merritt, the tech guru, who hosts a daily show called Daily Tech News Show. And, of course, we have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. And much more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And it's also available on Patreon.com. Isn't it time you become a patron of the Stuff File program? Well, say what you will about winter in Canada, but it can thwart crime. An Abbotsford, British Columbia burglar was successful in his February 7th break-in at a home, but his getaway was thwarted by a snowfall that blocked him in on a roadway. He eventually decided to ask a passerby for help and inadvertently picked out a man out of a city of 140,000 residents whose house he had just broken into and who recognized him from reviewing his home's security camera footage. The victim called police, who arrested the man. Police reported that it was the second residential break-in that night in which the snowfall had foiled a burglar's getaway. Okay, so here are the rules for Canadian criminals. Warm clothing, decent snow tires, and a plowed escape route. There you go. A 26-year-old man says he was making an action video with friends when he fell 40 feet down the chimney of a downtown Denver apartment building. Dustin Hinkle says he and a couple of friends were making a parkour video on the roof of the Denver City Lofts when he fell through a chimney cover. Parkour involves moving from point to point using obstacles along the way. Hinkle plummeted down the old incineration chimney until a cable caught his fall. He was stuck for nearly 2 hours until firefighters broke through a brick wall to get him out. Hinkle, who along with his friends is facing a trespassing charge, says he thought he was going to die and didn't believe in God until he survived the fall. Well, as you know, the Lord does indeed work in mysterious ways. And the decidedly uncelibate Catholic priest, 48-year-old Don Andrea Contin of Padua, Italy, was accused by three women in December of having as many as 30 different lovers over the years, organizing orgies on church property, visiting a swingers resort in France several times, making pornographic home videos of his trysts, encouraging one woman to have sex with a horse, and always carrying a briefcase full of vibrators, sex toys, and bondage equipment. Contin has not yet been charged with a crime, but a Catholic official said is finished as a priest. And here's a bonus. The boxes for his home videos were labeled by using the names of popes. Yeah. Once again, I have to say it, the Lord does work in mysterious ways. A man ended his engagement because of what his fiancée did at her bachelorette party. After she replaced him, she told her new boyfriend what she had done. He's now her ex, too, and the man told her employer. According to investigators, what she did was use cocaine at a party with colleagues. An attendee had brought the coke in a rubber duck. Their employer? The state attorney's office in Orange, Osceola, Florida. By the way, the boyfriend turned informant was a sheriff's deputy specializing in drug enforcement. State Attorney Aramis Ayala fired her and four others, but said there wasn't enough evidence to charge them. So, you fired her for something you can't prove she did? Interesting for a lawyer to do. But let's take a look at this bride never-to-be. Here is a woman who allegedly tells her boyfriend, who is a sheriff's deputy specializing in drug enforcement, something I'm assuming she knew, by the way, that she did coke at her bachelorette party. Okay, I get it now. She wasn't fired because she did coke. She was fired because she's a moron. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, it's been quite evident over the last little while that thanks to social media, some criminal acts are getting easier to prosecute. Authorities say they've arrested a 26-year-old woman accused of performing a sex act inside a Florida courthouse and then posting a video online. Jacksonville Sheriff's Office records show Brittany Jones was arrested Wednesday. Jones and 35-year-old Jeremiah Robinson had been wanted on a charge of a lascivious act. A local newspaper reported a video surfaced online in January showing a woman performing oral sex on a man in front of what appeared to be a courtroom. The newspaper reported Jones was being arraigned on a drug charge at the time in the Duval County Courthouse. A message on her Twitter account said, "Found a way to get my charges dropped." Police say Robinson turned himself in. One of the more telling quotes in another version of the story I found was, "When talking to Brittany's family, they said that they had tried to get her to stop posting vulgar videos online for years." Wow. Well, I'm guessing that will be coming to an end now for the foreseeable future. And you know, I'm having a bit of a problem understanding her Twitter remarks. She said, "Found a way to get my charges dropped." I think she's confusing the synonyms of charges dropped and getting off. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Tom Merritt is a technology journalist, writer, and broadcaster best known as the host of several podcasts. He currently hosts the Daily Tech News Show, Cord Killers, and Sword and Laser, among other shows. And Tom joins us on the line right now via Skype from Los Angeles. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Peter. How's it going?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us.
Now, thanks for having me.
I just mentioned three shows, and I know I'm not getting them all. How many do you have?
You know, I don't even know. Part of the problem is I have ideas for things and I try them out. And that's the beauty and the bane of the internet. It makes things like that easy. Some of them I try out for a season and then maybe they'll come back, maybe they won't. But usually I have about four a week. You named three of those, the other one being Current Geek, and then various little projects that pop in and out. Like right now I'm doing a podcast called Damn Fine Podcast that's rewatching Twin Peaks, for instance.
Wow. Okay, so you mentioned the fourth show that you have, which has the word geek in it. And the question I was going to ask you is, looking at your resume, were you the geekiest kid in the neighborhood growing up?
You know, I don't want to claim that because there were some pretty, you know, like in the positive sense, like geeky folks. Donald, who lived down the corner from me, was the one I would get my video games from because he knew how to go out and get them in the era of Commodore 64s and floppy disks. But yeah, I was one of the guys that had a computer at home and loved to mess around with it. But I also played sports and stuff like that. So it was a small town. There was only 5,000 people. You had to play multiple roles.
And by the way, when I use the term geek, it's never a negative term for me.
Yeah, same for me.
Just telling you that right now. So one of the shows you do is a Daily Tech News Show, or for those in the know, DTNS. And when you're doing Daily Tech, for someone, for instance, who might not be into the tech world and is afraid with the new advances that seem to come out each and every day, is it hard to jump on any sort of bandwagon or tech merry-go-round if you haven't been on it before?
Yeah, what we try to do is give people the information they need to know to understand all of this technology around them. And sometimes there'll be some phrases and terms that you might not know right away, but we do our best to try to explain things in a way that everybody can understand and at least get, even if they don't understand what a megabyte actually is, they get the idea, okay, that has to do with storing things. I'm familiar with that enough. Because we want to appeal both to folks who are in the IT industry and sysadmins and working hard at this every day, but also to folks who are like, you know what, I've got a smartphone and I want to figure out if it's the right one and how to make the best use of it.
Well, and that brings up another point. You talk about smartphones. It seems to be, I mean, I go back to when I was a kid, you know, when it came to a telephone, it was tethered to the wall in the kitchen usually, and it never changed. Now they're cordless, they're mobile, and it seems that they change constantly, even if the one you currently have is working perfectly. And I'm just wondering how you feel about the idea, you know, talking to somebody here who admittedly has a flip phone, how you feel about folks who need to get the newest, latest everything when it comes out?
I mean, those folks are early adopters, and they're folks who like to play around with stuff and see how it works. And I think that's absolutely fine if that's how they want to spend their time and money. Like you say, phones are becoming more than phones. They are big computers, except in small packages. The Commodore 64 computer I mentioned earlier couldn't do a hundredth of what the phone, even that flip phone in your pocket, can do these days. So, you always have to have folks out there who are trying these things and playing with the cutting edge so that the features that really work succeed and then fall down to the rest of us so we can all have a decent experience. And I think that's one of the weaknesses of smartphones is they still suffer a little bit from being designed by geeks for geeks in that we all understand that things are in beta, bugs happen, whereas your average cell phone user just wants their phone to work.
Right. As someone who does this for a living, as someone who is in tech, as someone who's always been interested in this stuff, when you're inundated with it every day, are there still things, or what types of things, still give you that gee whiz wow factor moment?
Yeah, it changes over time. I tell you what, man, when smartphones first hit the scene, specifically the iPhone with touchscreens, I was blown away because here was a web browser that I could hold in my hand and see the same thing that I saw on my desktop computer at home. And we've gotten used to that. Now that isn't as crazy. What's crazy to me these days are things like voice recognition and machine learning, where I can speak in natural language to something, and not only does it understand the words that I'm saying individually, but it understands the syntax and can answer them. Now, those work to varying effect. Sometimes they work better than others. But that kind of thing, and the ability to do automation and anticipate what it is that I'm going to need and say, oh, okay, we saw you walked into the room. We know at this time of day you generally spend some time, so we're going to turn the lights on for you. We're going to adjust the thermostat. And if you have any questions, just ask.
And with all these innovations, because when you talk about smartphones, smart homes, smart cars, there's always the concern and fear that somehow you're going to be hacked or your security is going to be in jeopardy. Do you hear these concerns coming from people? And are you concerned about it in any way, shape, or form?
Yeah, that's a really good question because, yes, it absolutely is a concern. And it's something that ever since we networked computers has been an issue. This goes all the way back into the 80s with viruses being passed around on floppy disks from one computer to the other. And so it is something that people should get good at understanding what the risks are. And I think that's the difficult part, is a lot of times the headline just wants to scare you into clicking and reading the article, and exaggerates things that aren't as risky, but doesn't actually instruct people into the things that they need to do to minimize their exposure. It's not dangerous to shop on the internet, but there are certain practices that people may do that make it very dangerous or expose their information. There are certain things you should watch out for when you're visiting a website or reading your email, things that you shouldn't click on, that you should be wary of. But I think the perception of the risks is exaggerated, whereas the things that we could do to minimize the risks are not as widely known as they should be.
As someone who does multiple shows, and many of them dealing with tech, a lot of them deal with a component of answering questions from your audience. Now, you've done this for years. I'm just curious to know, have you found a general pattern as to what people are asking for or asking about, and has that changed over the years?
Yeah, I think if I were able to lump it into two main categories, it's often which is the best thing to buy, which is always going to be tailored to the person's situation. There's very rarely a single answer for everyone. There's the category of how does this work, right? Like, what, you know, I can't get X to do the thing that I want. And then the questions that I enjoy the most are the ones that pose more philosophical questions, like, is this going to be good for us? How do we make sure that our privacy is protected? How do we work with these technologies and these companies without letting them take advantage of us? And those are some of the questions I enjoy dealing with the most.
Okay, well, let me just end it by asking you this one question, since you seem to get a lot of questions about which one works best. I think this has been one of the biggest issues since trying to debate the Middle East, and that is, which one's better, Mac or PC?
Yeah, and like I said, it depends on who you are. If you're someone who doesn't really care about getting under the hood, you may like Mac OS better these days because it does what you want. It can give you the web, it can give you email, and it's very simple and straightforward to use. However, it's not affordable. It's a more expensive choice. If you're somebody who wants control over the computer, you want to dig into the settings, you want to do things that maybe the designer of the computer didn't expect you to do, or you just want it to be more capable, you want it to do some really high-end things, and you want to save money, then a Windows PC is probably better.
And that's because when you want to save money, you're talking about Apple being sort of proprietary, and PCs, they can be generic, right?
Yeah, and you have multiple people making them, so there's a little more competition on price there.
Tom, it's fascinating stuff. I could talk to you all day, and I'm sure people would want to listen to you. They can go to you to the websites for various shows. Daily Tech News Show is .com is one of them. They can just go to TomMerritt.com, and I'm sure they can find a lot of things that you do. Correct?
That's right. DailyTechNewsShow.com for that show, and TomMerritt.com if you want everything all at once.
Excellent, Tom. Thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thanks for having me.
tech guru Tom Merritt. You can visit my website at thestufffile.com. Check out the show number for this program, which is number 0392, and you'll find links to Tom's site. Tom, by the way, is also on patreon.com. Check out his page there and become a patron as well. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Now that another football season has come to a close, the focus of the sport will now shift from exciting touchdowns to safety concerns like concussions. The debate over whether football is too dangerous is not new. More than 100 years ago, football was nearly banned because of carnage on the field. In 1905, 18 people died playing football. Calls for the game to be outlawed came from major newspapers and presidents of some of America's largest colleges. However, President Theodore Roosevelt was a big fan of football, so he brought together the top coaches and authorities to push for new safety rules, and they did just that. Their efforts even led to the creation of the NCAA. Let's be fair, that story is fascinating in part because the entire episode took place out of a courtroom. No lawsuits, just cooperation. It's a great example for all our leaders in sports and government today, as they, if you'll excuse the pun, attempt to tackle our current problems. Learn more at centerforamericatv.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And in the city that never sleeps, Peter Franklin is awake and with us right now. The Gabby Cabby is here. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello. It's too cold to sleep. I mean, we are really, we're freezing our gotchkas off, whatever that is.
Yes, there's been a storm that has traveled right across the country, right across the continent, really, and has hit all of the east now and is still battering in the Maritimes, so you're getting the brunt of it as well. But one of the things I know that was big in the news in the last few days in your neck of the woods was not just the storm, but also people huddled in the subway stations.
Yeah, this is a little bit of a complicated story, so everybody pay attention. Sometime in the past, we became a sanctuary city, whatever the heck that means. Okay, I mean, presumably it means if you're an immigrant, an illegal one I'm talking, somebody who just walked in over the border from Canada, because remember, we have a 3,000-mile unguarded border with Canada, basically. We have a 2,000-mile unguarded border with Mexico, basically. So if you come into the United States, you're breaking the law if you're coming in illegally. But if you can get to New York, you're safe. Because New York says, we don't care where you're from or what your status is, you can be here. As a matter of fact, when our cops arrest a perpetrator and they find out he's an illegal alien, they are forbidden to report that to the federal government by the city of New York. So, I mean, we really go out of our way. Anyway, said sometime in the past, they came up with this idea that they were going to issue identity cards to illegal aliens, presumably so they'd have some kind of identification to carry in their pocket. It was New York City ID card. And to make the pot even sweeter, they said, if you have one of these cards, you can go to all our museums for nothing. And so the immigrants, the illegal ones, started lining up to get the cards. And I said at that time, what are you, out of your mind? You're giving the government of the city of New York your address. Don't do that. Forget about this card. You don't need it. It's worthless. Well, nobody listened to me, and thousands of immigrants signed up for it and got the cards. And, of course, the city of New York now has the addresses, which, of course, they're secretly turning over to the federal government, who can now locate the immigrants. Anyway, because of that background and also the attitude that one of Trump's campaign promises was that he was going to get rid of the illegals has now come home to roost, so to speak. And I've run into a situation, I have a picture on my website, Gabby.com, which shows some illegal aliens, people who came in the city when they shouldn't have, or really weren't allowed to, sleeping in a subway station. And the reason they're sleeping in the subway station is they're afraid to go home at night because they're figuring ICE, that's the immigration people, are going to be there waiting for them because they're going to have the address, thanks to our dopey mayor who started this whole idea. So I hope I didn't lose anybody along the way, but it is a kind of a complicated story. And what makes it even horrendous is the first station I discovered this at was the Times Square station. So I'm thinking to myself, I'm standing there in the midst of people who are sleeping on cold, wet concrete floors. I mean, absolutely horrible. I wanted to go down to City Hall and punch the mayor in the head. I mean, that's not an actual threat. I don't want to get arrested. While upstairs, people are dining in restaurants, going to Broadway shows. I mean, it's just an unbelievable situation. But this proves the moral of the story is, if you're an illegal alien, next time you listen to Peter.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, speaking of the refugee ban, I just want to say three words in a bit of alliteration. Rabble-rousing rabbis.
Well, that's a funny story, and I guess I should sell it with a Jackie Mason accent. What can I tell you? You know what I'm going to say. This is it. Well, it just struck me funny because I think a group of Orthodox Jewish rabbis is funny. Okay? Don't take that as an anti-Semitic line, but there's just something about them doing something collectively, demonstrating. And they were demonstrating about this, that, and the other thing, and they all got arrested. And then I thought to myself, what could be funnier than a bunch of Jewish Orthodox rabbis getting arrested and put into the police van to be taken to the police station? And I thought to myself, my goodness, we're working on a Woody Allen movie here.
Mm. As long as it wasn't on Friday.
That's true.
After sundown.
That's true.
Meanwhile, what's the story about this teacher who went to the spa?
Yeah, this principal of a school on Long Island, which is, you know, our suburban area, arranged a night out for his teachers. But he picked a spa, which is known as one of these sleazy places where couples and not couples go to do the mufky-fufky. If you don't know what mufky-fufky is, go ask your father. But in any event, that also struck my funny bone. He's in big trouble, by the way. He's going to lose his job because you don't want your teachers going to a place that specializes in mufky-fufky. But it struck my fancy, and if it strikes my fancy, I'm busting to tell you.
So, is everything at this so-called house of ill repute of ill repute, or do they actually do real spa stuff and stop?
Well, I don't really know, because this past week my wife and I celebrated our 41st wedding anniversary.
Mazel tov.
Thank you very much. So I haven't had anything. Don't get me wrong, I love my wife and I think she's the sexiest woman on the face of the earth. But I haven't had occasion in at least, well, I've known her 45 years, in at least 45 years to go to any of those kinds of places. Not that I ever did.
But you're our...
And by the way, I got my wife a present. You know what I got her for our anniversary?
What'd you get her?
A mop.
Oh, man. I can...
Nah, I didn't really. I just feel like being silly.
But, you know, you're our intrepid reporter. I thought for sure you would go there, at least in the interest of true journalism.
No, I'm more than that. I'm a romanticist. I think when you hug and kiss people, there has to be an emotion. Call me old-fashioned. What can I tell you? Mm.
Well, what's needed in there are maybe police officers with cameras, which brings us to our next story, and that is cameras on police officers.
You know, I must be able to look into the future. When they started this thing with the cop thing, that they would have cameras, I don't know if you have it in your neck of the woods, that would photograph everything they're doing. State troopers do it on the dashboards of the cars. Cops have it pinned to their breast pocket and everything. And I said, what are you, nuts? The cops are just going to turn the things off, or they're going to make them defective. They're not going to wear them and use them. Now, I'm not saying there aren't any police departments where they might not be, you know, using them properly, but the problem with the ones that the New York City Department is buying don't work. Hey, that's even better than turning them off. So then the cop can say, I had it on, but it didn't work. So, of course, somebody raised the question, other than me, because there are people who raise questions other than me, is why are they buying defective cameras? Is there some latent desire that they don't work?
Hmm. Interesting indeed. Meanwhile, we have talked on the air in one way, shape, or form for the better part of more than 25 years now. So I have always remembered every time you mention this particular place that you correct the rest of the world who seems to pronounce it incorrectly. But you have a story about Grand Central Terminal.
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, the reason it's the terminal is because it's the end of the line. And one of the trains that leaves from there every night, I think it's every night, which my wife and I have been meaning to do for years and years, which means I'll finally get to see you in person, is there's a night train that goes to Montreal.
Yes, indeed.
And we really would love to take it. But in any event, it's the terminal because it's the end of the line, whereas Penn Station is a station, but it's not the end of the line. Well, when they built it, and we're going back maybe, I don't know, 80 years, I'm not really sure of the date, there was a building in front of it that blocked the view so that you never really got a full view of Grand Central Terminal. Well, they've just taken down that building that's blocking the view. Unfortunately, they're going to put another one up that's going to be bigger. And the view is absolutely spectacular. I mean, people are now seeing Grand Central Terminal that in their entire lifetime they've never seen. And for this period of time, it's a spectacular thing. I think I put a picture of it on the website, didn't I?
I believe you did, and people should go to the website.
Yeah, no, at Gabby.com.
Gabby.com.
It's really spectacular. And I'm a train nut anyway, so anything to do with trains. But people, take a look at it. It's really quite a shot.
And we started with the subways. Let's end with the subways. I understand there's a new smart card being issued.
Yeah, well, our politicians are very clever. We all use what's called a Metro card. But that's linked to our credit card. So if you ask the average New Yorker, what's the subway fare? Their answer will be, you know, I'm not really sure because it just comes out of my credit card. I know it sounds stupid, but that's very clever of the politicians. They raise the fare, nobody knows it. Well, what they're going to do now is they're going to cut out the middleman. Instead of using the credit card to get the Metro card, you're going to be able to use your credit card. And that will make us even more distance because right now, when I go on the subway, I'm not really sure what I'm paying for the trip. When I go through a toll booth on a bridge, I'm not really sure what I'm paying for it. So it's a very clever ploy to link something like that to credit cards, and that's what they're going to do. They're going to get rid of everything else, and you'll just use your credit card to get on the subways and the buses.
And last but not least, sir, a celebrity sighting. I know that you've seen a Canadian.
Listen, who in show business in the United States isn't a Canadian? You people are warped all over the place.
Well,
I recognized him. And by the way, I must tell you, yeah. Put a picture of him. We're talking about Mike Myers. I put a picture of him on the website, which was one of his roles, I guess, Dr. Evil or something like that. Mm-hmm. So you look at it and you recognize him. But when you see the guy in real life, and I'm sure you've probably seen pictures of him in real life, he doesn't look anything like that. I mean, it's an amazing transformation. And I think I'm the only person that was on Fifth Avenue that even knew who he was as he walked by me. He was by himself and just, I guess, shopping. And what I did was what I usually do. I don't bother these people because what am I going to say? Loved you in your last movie, Mike? You know.
Well, first of all, one of the reasons people wouldn't recognize him is he hasn't worked in the last few years because he got married. He had children late in life, so he's been out of the public eye for the better part of over 5 years now.
Yeah, but he's such a vivid character. I mean, he really is.
But you also,
because of his roles.
One of the reasons he was in New York is he's promoting his new book, which is entitled Canada.
See, you know, you are really the master of all trivia. You know that? It's absolutely amazing.
So pick it up and find it at fine bookstores everywhere.
Yeah, well, almost all our books are on e-books now. Everybody's walking around with an e-book thing, and we're probably the biggest readers in the world because everybody here uses public transportation, so we're all reading, reading, reading.
Hey, I got my Kindle. I'm reading all the time. Peter, always a pleasure to have you on the program. There's more information that can be found on your website at www.gabby.com. People can also send you an email to peter@gabby.com. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about a racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We do have time for just one more item, and you know what that is, boys and girls. Yes, it's time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff file presents the idiot of the day.
A tourist heading to Key West was arrested after mailing meth to his Florida hotel. 24-year-old Robert Bear from Arizona was arrested at the hotel in Key West. Bear was hoping to try meth for the first time while he was on vacation on the Florida island. When Bear mailed a package, he was not yet a guest at the hotel and so addressed it only to the hotel. When staff opened the small box, they found the drugs wrapped in dirty socks and paper. Bear had included his name and return address on the package. After finding the drugs, the hotel called the police, and an undercover officer was sent to the hotel to act as the hotel manager. Bear arrived, checked in with the faux manager, received his package, and was then arrested in the lobby after a brief struggle with more undercover officers. According to a police spokesperson, Bear allegedly told police he had never tried meth before, but wanted to give it a shot in Key West because he was in a party town. The arrest was for suspicion of methamphetamine possession, resisting arrest, and possession of drug paraphernalia. Now, why, oh why, would you mail meth to a hotel you're going to visit and place your own return address on the package when you're not even a guest at the hotel yet? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0392. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And once again, that's 0392. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check us out on Patreon, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Today's broadcast could be heard directly in your home, car, or wireless device, or on your computer, so you can listen on an outpatient basis. For those of you hearing this show directly inside your head, please adjust your medication.